Hello and welcome to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. I'm Kelly Taylor. Today on the show is Dylan Silver. She's the host of the new HGTV show on Snapchat called You Wish You Lived Here, which you can find on the Discover page as part of Snap's original content. Basically, with a budget of $1,000, she and a design team meet with someone and completely renovate their bedroom, their studio apartment, their kitchen, and some other spaces using the guest's celebrity inspiration as well as a ton of unique and easy to replicate DIY projects. Dylan Silver is super creative and smart and funny, and also, might I add, has a cool name. So, needless to say, I love chatting with her. Enjoy. So, what you've done a lot of stuff, media things to promote this, haven't you?
Yeah.
I saw you were on Rachel Ray.
Today.
Oh, it aired today?
It aired today.
Nice.
Yeah, I think actually in LA it'll air at 2:00.
Oh, that's exciting.
Maybe Angelinos prefer watching Rachel in the afternoon.
Yes, I love to cook in the afternoon.
Yeah.
When did you go there?
Like 2 a couple days ago? 2 weeks ago.
Oh, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, wow. I think it was either a week and a half or 2 weeks ago. I was in New York for that. Yeah.
Wow, that's exciting.
It was awesome.
That's cool.
It was a dream come true.
Yeah, for sure. She's been here a couple times. I love her voice.
I love her voice. And you know, she's such a, I'm like, wait, what words can I say? She's such a queen because she didn't get married till she was in her late 30s. She doesn't have children. She advocates very outspokenly for you know, organizations that she cares about. There's just, it's amazing that a community of like middle America, you know, reveres her and respects her. And I feel like, you know, the fact that she is an independent woman that isn't the typical kind of person we would think we would see on television, but now it is because she's been on the air for 10 years.
Yeah.
So there were these aspects to her that I didn't even realize. I always knew I loved her, but then when I was researching her a little more, prepping for the, you know, the appearance, I was floored by just, you know, 10 years ago, I think, to have be doing what she was doing. Given those circumstances,
definitely
was really different than, you know, today. It sounds like, oh, that's a given, but
yeah, that's crazy. She's been on for 10 years. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, I remember when I was in college, she had started. We would get her magazine at home, and my mom's obsessed with her cookware.
Oh, yeah. She's got like an empire.
She's totally an empire, yeah. But really personable at the same time.
Yeah.
Like when you were kicking it with her, you weren't like, you feel like an empire. Like you have an empire.
Exactly.
No.
Yeah.
Like you just seem really relaxed.
And yeah. There's something about her voice I really am drawn to. It's kind of like,
it's like husky.
Yeah. Husky. Exactly.
Yeah. It's husky, but like healthy, raspy.
Yeah. 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 She just seems like quick and I don't know. She seems cool.
She is quick. They also warned me. They said the things that I love with, especially with my background in like improv and hosting and stuff, they were like, just make sure, you know, we're going to prep you, but she's going to chime in with whatever she wants. She's going to say whatever she wants. I was like, great.
Yeah.
You know, but apparently the producers there were like, we're so glad you're into that. Some people, you know, because she's so outspoken. I think even in our episode, she talked about, because the whole show that I host is about life on a budget.
Uh-huh.
And Rachel even said, like, I'm so glad that I didn't have money for such a long time. She just went on this whole thing that, again.
So then she knows, like, sometimes like you have to work for things versus what she's talking about.
But I feel like on other daytime shows, none of the hosts would ever be like,
oh, like stray from the format.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah, and also be so honest and vulnerable about their own lives.
Yeah.
On a, you know, seemingly cookie cutter, you know, like happy cheery show. She talks about the truth in a very joyful way, which is what I love to do also. So she was awesome.
What'd you guys do? Did you make something?
Yeah.
Did you DIY something?
We did 3 DIYs. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out, have you always been a big DIYer, or is this sort of like been the past couple years has been a thing? Like, would you classify yourself as a DIYer?
I'd say I'm a DIY enthusiast.
Yeah.
I think out of necessity and living, you know, being, even when I was dating, I never really lived with a partner. Or if I had friends, we were all in our separate rooms, but sharing a living space. So I think that aspect of my life came because I didn't have the money to buy the dream home or place that I wanted. So and then it was a pleasure aspect to realize that I had the ability to do it on my own.
Yeah.
I was thinking about it, even when I was in high school, I moved to Israel with my mom, and being in a foreign country, my room was like a sanctuary. So even back then, I was already thinking about design. I mean, my like girls' room. Like, I love watching movies with kids' bedrooms. I just feel like...
Oh, and they're amazing.
They're amazing. Because you just know it's... That's the first time in your life you get the opportunity to see what inspires you and the things that you're into, like, visually in front of you.
Totally.
At all times. So I think since then... And I was building stuff for, like... You know, I was really into vintage. In Israel, there were so many vintage shops and secondhand stores.
Yeah.
And which LA, there's an abundance of them too. So all of my passions sort of got to carry on into adulthood. But I only moved out on my own like 5 months ago. So,
and just 5 months ago?
Yeah.
Wow.
Finally got
in
my
LA?
Own place. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nice.
So again, now I feel like I'm back to where I was when I was in high school. Like, well, now that it's just me, like, how do I... And then it's like, oh, and money's a thing now too. How do I afford to have a beautiful, but it's totally doable. And
yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I think, you wish you lived here is a cool idea. Cause there's so many times when you watch, House Hunters, for example,
mm-hmm.
where it's totally like, what do you guys do and how can you afford this? It's like an insane budget that they
have. There's such good memes
about
it.
It's just not relatable.
It.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Like, it's, I feel like there's so many funny, yes, exactly. Funny memes about it. Just like, this is not realistic. Like, I could never, especially in Los Angeles, I could never afford this.
Yeah. Especially in
so
LA.
So what are you doing? And having a budget of $1,000 forces you basically to DIY, right?
Yeah. You don't have a choice, but I think what's really cool about the show is that you realize even if I do have a choice, I actually want to start to be doing it more on my own anyway.
Yeah.
Because then I get to make it more personal and actually get the exact thing that I'm seeking.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I feel like DIY also is one of those things that maybe you do it once. You know how there's like Pinterest fails?
Yes.
Where you try and do something and then you see it on the internet and it's beautiful and then you try it and it's a fail. It's
total
like,
fail. Yeah.
This is not what it looks like in the picture. I feel like DIY can be that way until you do it a couple times maybe and like get some confidence to where you're like, all right, I could do this.
Yeah.
And try and seek out. Like, I love the one that you did of the lemon doormat
that
or
so
placemat
cool.
for... Was that for Rihanna?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so cool. I would never, ever think to do that.
I know, and it's so simple.
Easy. Yeah.
And it looks like something that you'd go to Target and then
totally.
Buy
yeah. Yeah.
and spend $30 easily. Be like, where am I ever going to find this?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So are you coming up with these? Like, how, will you tell me about the process of just like when you show up at someone's apartment or
yeah.
studio or something, is there multiple people who are contributing to this? Like, how much are you putting in these ideas out there?
Yeah.
And we talk about that.
It's a team. So a typical HGTV show, I mean, I don't know how many, but I know they have a lot more, you know, those are half hour
yeah.
shows. So we're a really small crew. We do the same amount of work that a beautiful half hour show would have, but we do it in days. So, and because we're in these really small spaces, we have a really small team. So it's a combination of, HGTV and the production company we had for season one and,
yeah.
and myself and some other creators and just, you know, and really it always goes back to the individual whose home we're redoing. So like
gotcha.
I've mentioned this a couple times on other like shows and stuff that it's not just like, oh, because it's always we're inspired by a celebrity, right?
Yeah.
But it's not like the necessarily just... I just love everything about this person. It's like, no, what do you love specifically about that celebrity? So sometimes
right.
it's their, the essence of their character or maybe the vibe of their music videos. Maybe that's their actual home and how their interior design style looks. So it's always something different. And then it's also meeting the needs of that person. Like, you know, in LA, so many people are reaching for their dreams and pursuing their artistic endeavors, so sometimes homes here have to serve multiple purposes, you know.
Right, like someone's recording music in their
yeah.
apartment.
Yeah,
or,
we have an, yeah. we have our the episode that's going to air in January. One of them, we legitimately had to solve that we had an artist who couldn't record music anymore because his neighbors kept complaining about the sound. So we tested out how loud was too loud, and then we built him something pretty amazing. I, you know, just
yeah.
watch and see.
How many episodes did you guys do?
The season one is 12 episodes.
12 episodes. Okay. And how many have posted so far?
So far?
Like through December.
I think we're up to 8 or 9
yeah.
right now. But what's really cool is that So every Sunday a new one drops, but they all live on Snapchat
and they're
not going to go away. So you can get into it and then binge watch the show, because every episode is between 5 and 7 minutes long.
Yeah, it's not
just like
long.
All the good stuff without, like, I feel like when you watch it, a show like that on TV, you're like 5 minutes in, you're like, oh, well, now I got to wait to see the end and like, yeah, how did it come out? But yeah, by a show, you get that gratification pretty immediately.
Yeah, totally. I have to admit, when I was like a couple weeks ago, when I read about this, I was at home. I was just like, you know, like when you get home from work and then I went to work out and took a shower, cooked dinner, and I'm like comfortable on my couch. And then it's kind of like the time when I can like research things.
Okay.
And I don't use Snapchat that much. I more so it's because like there's just a million things that you can use now. There's like a million places. And I didn't even know that Snapchat has original shows now.
Yeah.
So I went down the rabbit hole of like the whole Discover page. I thought it was just like famous people's Snapchats. But there's like obviously news content like from news sources, and they have like, they're called Snap Originals, right?
Yes.
And that's what this is.
Yeah.
In addition to, like, there's, like, crime ones. There's, like,
narrative ones. There's reality show ones. Yeah, there's tons. I'm partial to our show. I think it's visually also, like, one of the best vertical shows.
Yeah, and that's there. Really cool, too, because it's shot vertically. Like for the phone.
Yeah, sometimes when I'll post a picture of the monitor on my Instagram, I'll get people writing to me that I don't know saying, stop shooting vertical. It's killing me as a filmmaker, as an artist.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, it's like they're fans, but if you watched an episode, you'd see that it has to be out of our platform. Yeah. It is on a phone. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the way of the world. It's for Snapchat.
It's so for Snapchat. It yeah. Which is, once you get into the new given circumstance of what you have to do because of that, there's so much play that you can achieve. Yeah.
How did you've probably talked about this already, but I don't know. How did you get this? How did you get involved with this?
The job?
Yeah.
I knew the production company from other work. I had done some bit of writing for them. And they always knew that I was a performer, that I was a host and an actress, and that I did comedy as well. And they put, when they found out that this job was around and they were sort of potentially getting the bid to be the company themselves, they actually gave a list of people that they shared, like names of people that they thought were good hosts. And I was in that list. I did an audition where I showed an apartment. I feel like now I can confess. It was at a time when I was still not living on my own. So I went into someone else's apartment and I was like, welcome to my home. And this is I made stories based on the aspects of that friend's home instead of, you know, because it wasn't my own yet. And then I talked really candidly about, you know, my love for design and what it means to me. And then when that started to do well, like when I knew that they were actually considering me, because I believe they had been searching for months. So I already knew that, because in my eyes, I thought, well, why are they interested in working with me? Because there's a lot of people out there who are famous on the internet already, mm-hmm. who are famous for DIYs already. And I just leaned in more to, if they hired me, what I thought the reasons would be. And I sent them some of my comedy work, and I also sent them this video. Something I wrote was a finalist in the Sundance Labs, and when that happened, I had to make a pitch video. But instead of doing sort of a generic like, "Hi, I'm Dylan, and this is my concept, and this is why you should work with me," I just went on the streets of Santa Monica in the promenade and basically like lovingly harassed all sorts of strangers and talked to them about the show and the themes of it, and just talked about vulnerable topics with people I'd never met before and made them laugh. And I think the point of that was to show HGTV that at the end of the day, I love not only millennials, because that show was for millennial audience too, but I like making people feel good even when we have to talk about, you know, like this show. It's not easy, I think, for someone to say like, "Hi, this is all my broken furniture."
Yeah.
Or, "I can't afford a mattress right now, so I'm on the floor." And I think that it takes so much guts to do that. And I think that this show requires somebody who has that, who's been there on some level already and has a lot of empathy for that circumstance and can find play out of it and say, like, let's revel in this honesty and get so excited that we get to, you know, bring a change to your life and thus to the lives of other people. Because I think the whole point of the show is to empower audiences to consider again, or consider maybe for the first time, that they can have a place that makes them feel good, even though
totally
they don't necessarily have the budget.
Yeah, because I feel like living in, let's say, a studio and you don't have a lot of space, and like you said, maybe your bed's on the floor, and like you've got like a secondhand dresser that maybe the drawers are broken. Yeah. You don't have a lot of pride in your space.
No. I feel like you're also saying, like, I was like, oh yeah, I know that life. I feel like we've all been there.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In some ways when I watch this, I'm like, I feel like I'm still living in that because I'm like not a good decorator. But
I'm sure that's not true. But I get it. I feel you.
But there is such a difference between like even just sprucing up the place a little bit. You're suddenly more inclined to like have people over and like have dinner, you know, with your friends. And
also I think like honoring where you're at. Like I remember when I moved out on my own for the first time, like 5-6 months ago, it took ages before I got a lick of furniture because monetarily I had to wait.
Yeah.
And I had to choose, because I could have been really embarrassed about that, and I chose instead to just embrace it. And I invited everybody over, and I started doing a collage. I took photos of all my friends eating on my floor, and nice. You know, just like reveling on how, you know, our bony butts were being pained by the wood. And I just think that you can look around in your circumstance and be like, this is not the way I saw my life at this age, right. Or you could be like, that is true.
Yeah.
But let's party. like it's okay. It's okay.
Yeah. That's a good mentality versus like comparing yourself to like, there's no, I feel like it's totally useless to like look at your life and then compare yourself to, oh, my friends just bought a house or this or that. You know,
it's like, really hard. And with social media, that's what we do all the time. So I'm really glad that now on social media, there is a show that encourages that you can see a reflection of yourself and feel, you know, if you're going to compare yourself, you can be like, I'm doing good.
Yeah.
Like, we're all in it together.
So the contestants, how were they picked?
They applied. They sent a video, like a selfie video. Basically, like in the show, you see. They say, like, hey, my name is, and this is my home. And they tell us, you know, what celebrity inspires them and why. And again, for every person, it's a different reason.
Yeah.
And then from there, we're able to
go to work. I love the DIY parts. Like even the spoon one, there's the plastic spoons that you make a lamp.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, I would never in 1 million years think of that.
I know. And nobody, I don't ever think I thought, because when I think of colored spoons too, because that lamp we're using black spoons. When I think of colored spoons, I feel like I'm at a birthday party, like eating cake or ice cream or something. So the idea that, oh my gosh, you can make a piece of furniture out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And even, I think that at one point in one of the shows, you mentioned instead of wallpaper, you guys use fabric because that's kind of better for if you're renting.
Yeah. Way cheaper.
Yeah, I can imagine. It looks cool. Like even if you just do one wall, it's like, it's so cool.
Yeah. And if you find a pattern that you really like, but the feel of the texture itself is flat. Yeah. I mean, you could do you could have some texture to it too, but if you really want it to just land on a like look really sleek.
Yeah.
I love that DIY.
Do these people have to consult their landlords?
They have to get approval. Everyone has to get approval from the buildings to allow them to, you know, I mean, we're not doing anything crazy, but
you're not like knocking down walls or anything.
No, but we show up with, you know, our tools and a camera, and then people can be freaked out. What are you doing in my home?
Yeah.
Or
we got a crew. HGTV's here.
Yeah, right.
But sprucing up the
But we don't have like signs that say like, we're with HGTV. It's cool.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite, particular part of this? Like a favorite room that you did, or just like maybe a little project that stands out that you were like, I love that we did this.
I've been asked that quite a bit. I feel like every time I think of a different DIY that we've done, but lately, because the show is airing for quite a couple of good weeks now, I'm reminded about the versatility of what we've done and the variety, because it's not just bedrooms. You know, we've done, and there's in episodes to come, you'll see, like, we've done small studios and we've done cavernous. There's a cavernous studio coming up where it's like, with $1,000, how are we going to help this painter make a space that suits his needs and feels good and is visually engaging, both for, you know, when he has clients coming over, but also for him, for his personal life. Or we have a backyard episode coming up.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. So it was also, you know, it again, always surpassing expectations, because when we think about this, we think typically, oh, I have a bedroom. Like, what do I do? We've done kitchens. Yeah. How are you going to renovate a kitchen? Every time a renter looks at a kitchen, I feel like we just get so sad.
Because for sure. Like, yeah. It's like so outdated.
So outdated. Yeah. You don't think you can do a lot. And I mean, this week's episode, the one that just aired on Sunday, what we did to her kitchen, we just did a couple different little changes and it looked, oh my gosh, beautiful.
Yeah. That's so cool. Do you have places that you go just since in doing this that you've learned about to get like maybe more inexpensive pieces for your room or?
Oh yeah. Since the day I got to Los Angeles, I've been going to the same spots to get my furniture for years now. There's a lot of Salvation Armies around LA.
Yeah.
But there's also St. Vincent. It's near Atwater.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just a massive version of Salvation Army, but for furniture particularly.
And you find a lot of stuff there?
Yeah. But also you enjoy the pleasure of just going and like without expectation. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in downtown LA, there's a lot of secondhand furniture spots.
Yeah.
Revival, vintage. They used to be across the street from St. Vincent. They had this little tiny spot and they just moved into a slightly bigger, but also still tiny spot. And again, you walk in and at any given time, there's just a few pieces, but there's always something. And if not, you just go back next week and you look again. And there's like this feeling of community in all this, which is so lovely. You know, you're putting your money towards something that you can afford that has a history and also supporting these small businesses.
I totally agree. And you know how people are kind of, have you ever heard about how someone's like, oh, I got my wedding ring from a consignment shop or something.
Yeah.
And people are against that. I'm like, I think it's cool because like it was owned by someone else. And whatever that story was, like it's getting another story, like a better one. Like,
I love how people knock that. But if they were to say this was my grandmother's, they'd be like, oh that's just, regardless of whether it was, you know, pretty or atrocious looking.
Yeah.
Like, that's so sentimental.
Yeah. No, exactly. But I totally agree about furniture when you're like just going to a flea market or a consignment place, like versus just kind of, I don't know, buying something that's been old and loved and used before in someone else's space with their family versus like going to Target or whatever and just buying something.
I think people also have a misconception because when they think of used furniture, they think of a used thing from IKEA. So it hasn't necessarily lasted and it's not necessarily in the best shape a couple years later.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've gotten IKEA stuff secondhand and it was fine. But I think the things that we're talking about are pieces that were made, you know, decades ago that it was proper wood. And so even the nicks and dents are kind of beautiful. They're not, it's not the same kind of wear and the way they age is different.
Yeah, yeah, totally. It's, and you can tell that it's been like, I love things. My mom loves to go to Amish country.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm from the Midwest and there's like multiple Amish countries.
They're so good with wood, right? They just make gorgeous stuff.
Yes. And when you see it, it's like, this just seems like it was totally handmade.
And with, it was.
With love. Exactly. Aww. Yeah. Like tables or like she bought something from there. I think it was a table. But anything, like even a rocking chair. I'm like, who can make a rocking chair?
Suddenly you're like, I feel like I need that rocking chair.
But Yeah, it's cool. You said you lived in Israel. How long did you live in Israel?
High school.
All of, so 4 years?
4 years, yeah.
Wow.
Very formidable.
Where were you before that?
I grew up in New York.
Like the city?
Right outside of the city. Both my parents worked in the city, but I grew up in Long Island. And then after high school, I went to Washington, D.C. for college.
Oh, that's right. At George Washington,
Wait, did you go there? Do you know someone that went there?
No. Well,
I feel like in LA, a lot of people don't know that school.
I think my husband's aunt and uncle went there. I think that's where they met.
Nice. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they seemed like they went there at a really cool time, like in the late 60s.
I feel like so many places that was the coolest
time. I know. I know. That's how close is that to like the White House?
It's right there. When Obama got elected the first time, the White House is within walking distance. We all ran there and went to his inauguration. And
wow, that's a sweet experience.
Yeah, it was a really... And having lived abroad from ages 13 to 18, there's so much about just culture and the awareness that happens when you become a teenager. So I basically left here at 13, and when I came back at 18, not only to be dropped back into the U.S. and to go to university, but to in that city of all places where I just had...
Yeah.
Oh man, the abundance of amazing professors and teachers. Not even in, I strayed away from my, I got degrees in acting and writing from my scholarship, but I took political science classes and history classes and religion classes because they had so many guest teachers just come in for a semester or two because they were in town in Washington to do incredible things. So
yeah,
it was awesome. I met tons of Republicans and Democrats at parties and sort of learned about just the humorous pranks they'd play on each other in the White House or just the reality of what that life is on the daily, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you ever go into politics?
I don't know. I feel like I'm a real advocate of, what's the right word? I believe that no matter what you are, there's something above, I don't think any issue is black and white. And I think above that, by believing in that, and it negates humanity in a way. So I think if I were to ever become political, it would be more so through my work or through my art without calling it politics. I think the best way to affect the change is nobody needs you to preach to them or propagate anything. I think you have to trust that by being the kind of person you want to see more in the world,
it will inspire other people.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff I write, just by the nature of the story itself or by the characters that are in it, it's going to make you question things and reconsider maybe what you know. But that doesn't mean that you're losing a sense of yourself, because that's what it can feel like sometimes when when it feels like you're being challenged, when actually it's just saying like, let's consider other ways that we could be in the world. And
totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you watched, there's this show on Netflix that I watched probably a couple months ago. It's with someone named Darren Brown. He's an illusionist. Have you heard of him?
I don't think so. Is this the magician show?
I guess he considers himself a hypnotist.
Oh, maybe. Okay. I haven't seen that. Okay.
But I think he also is a magician. I don't know. Like all those words in my mind seem like kind of similar. Uh-huh. The thing that just came out, he's done a lot of crazy shows, and his whole thing is sort of like he's able to sort of like fool you into doing something that just doesn't seem possible. And his most recent special on Netflix, he interviews a ton of people to find one person, and he ends up picking this guy who's from Florida and seems to have a pretty strong stance against immigration.
Mm-hmm.
And he picks this guy and he wants to see if he can convince someone who sort of has a pretty strong stance against immigration, if he can get them to, by the end of this kind of secret trick he's playing on this guy, to take a bullet for an illegal immigrant.
Okay.
And I don't want to give it away. Well, actually, it's been out for a while. Okay. And basically, long story short, the person does. And it's crazy because the whole time you watch how someone's thought process changes, and he just puts this guy, he thinks he's part of some other thing, other documentary. He doesn't have any idea what's going on.
Yeah.
But you see little seeds being planted in his mind, and slowly seeing mentality change. It was
and trusting,
the coolest thing.
That's awesome. And trusting that that's possible. Like, mm-hmm. I need to lead with the faith and the trust that that can happen, and that again, the ways to do that are And also to trust that that person can come to that conclusion. Because the reality is, whether I want to convince somebody of something or not, it's not going to happen because of me. Yeah. At the end of the day, they're going to have to make the choice to change the way they are. And, you know, to accept that every human is fallible. And that's okay. And that you can choose today to want to have a different opinion or help someone in a different way than maybe you didn't want to right before that. So,
yeah. I was reading, you just wrapped something, a documentary that you made.
Yeah,
right?
I directed.
What was that about?
I directed a documentary about, and this is also like, I guess, alignment with what we're talking about. I directed a documentary about two of the world's most famous horse clinicians. Their names are Mark Rashid and Jim Masterson. And
is that like a horse doctor?
Jim does body work, so like massages horses.
What?
Yeah, and Mark, he teaches riders how to ride better. But what's different about these two men, they're like cowboys that are just very, you seem very practical and pragmatic, but they're so loving. But actually, you come to find that they believe that it's not the horse that's the problem, it's humanity. So if there's an issue that's arisen in your horse, it's actually probably a reflection of the issues within yourself. So again, talk about just when they hired me, they said, you know, Dylan, we're doing this clinic, and because I love them, we've worked together in the past on artistic projects, and they said, you know, do you want to come document a week of this clinic? Because a lot of horse people, they don't, they don't collaborate very often. So the fact that two men who are so well revered are actually even coming together and doing a thing, a clinic together, is a rarity. So they said, Dylan, do you want to come and document this? And they sent me a beat sheet, which is basically like a, this is what we're thinking. And it was like, here's Mark doing this, here's Jim doing that.
Oh, okay.
And I wrote, and I called them back and I said, please don't hire me. And they were like, why? And I said, because if you were to hire me, I wouldn't want to do a clinical kind of informative documentary. I'd want to do a narrative one. And I'd want to show how you change people's lives by us just watching it happen. Jim, I mean, Mark himself has written, I think, 15 published books. He's a martial artist. They talk about concepts of softness. So in the documentary, you know, I'll never forget. So one of the women we documented, she said to Mark, I want to ride like you. Like, I see you on your horse, and it's like you're one and you're just gliding. And he said to her, okay, well, you want that softness and sort of ease, right? And she's like, yeah. And he said, well, how do you, when you pick up a coffee cup, how do you set it down? When you open a door, do you slam it when you close it, or do you just gently, you know, how, when you walk, are you deliberate? Like, is it heavy steps, or is it just sort of, does your body feel relaxed? So it's this whole thing of, if you want to, in the immediate with a friend or a partner or an animal, like have an interaction where you're really seeing each other, you've got to take care of the way you see yourself and the way you do things in everything. So it's,
yeah, totally.
So yeah.
And I feel like an animal, like a horse even specifically, like, can probably sense if you're tense and you're,
they can.
Right?
Yeah. Horses can, they know and feel everything. And because they're herd animals, and because they're always afraid, they always are thinking about like, am I okay? Am I safe? You know, just, they don't, there's this thing that Mark talks about in one of his books, which is actually the kind of person and artist I just want to be in the world. He talks about how, so like, animals, they'll gravitate towards an alpha typically, right? Like someone who is the leader of the pack. But alphas by nature use their power by force or fear-based tactics. You know, I think we can talk about, even in government, right? It's the same kind of thing. We use fear to ignite submission from people. We tell them what they are so that they start thinking of themselves in a certain way. And horses, horses, the alpha will sort of use force to, so everyone feels comfortable. They feel like this person will protect me, but they're actually living on eggshells, and you know, their cortisol levels are probably through the roof.
Yeah. There's probably a lot of workplaces like that too, right?
Yeah, totally. So again, like, that's why the documentary, I love it, because we're thinking back to as humans, like, how does this resonate in our lives? But actually the kind of person or the kind of horse that a herd would really love to gravitate towards is called the, Mark coined the term, the passive leader. So it's someone who isn't wishy-washy, they're really grounded, they're making deliberate choices, and they're doing what needs to get done, but with the least amount of resistance and force. Kind of like martial artists, like you train to really, you know, you could hurt somebody, but yeah. The whole point is I'm going to use as little force, the least amount of resistance to achieve what I need. And so suddenly the herd not only is gravitating towards you because they feel protected by you, but you make them feel comfortable and relaxed and they can just live their lives and, you know...
Yeah.
And it's like, we think if in a work environment, especially if I'm in a position of even remote leadership, I don't want anyone to think of it that way. You know, I want people to feel.
Yeah. Swift, thorough.
Swift, thorough, and then fraternity, because that's what it's about. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a community thing. I think that's another thing with politics. Like, I believe that fraternity trumps everything. And even leadership, I struggle with it because every human is infallible. I'm not perfect. Nobody is. So to put all of your value and your it gives over your power, because the reality is I think we're more powerful in numbers. Like a herd of horses is way more powerful than that one alpha, you know?
Totally.
Yeah. But somehow that alpha is able to manipulate the situation. And
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I just watched one about, it's called Jane. It's about the life of Jane Goodall.
It's so good.
Have you seen that?
Of course. It's so good. I wept. I was on a flight on Delta. So the person next to me is like, are you okay?
Airplane movies always make me cry.
I know, right? There's something with the air, too. Oh, that's what it is.
Yeah.
I was like, or is it the one beer I have that just makes me so emotional?
Yeah, that too.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. It's probably a mix of both, I don't think.
The footage, I mean, it's just...
I'm so glad you've seen it. Oh. It's amazing. So I guess most of it is her then husband at the time shot it.
Yeah, that's what
and
it was.
It's crazy. Because like just the quality of it's amazing.
It's amazing.
I told my sister about it. Because my niece is I got her a book a couple years ago. And it's like a kid's book about Jane Goodall. And
I think I bought the same one for my niece.
It's called Ordinary People Do Extraordinary Things or something.
Oh, okay.
It's about like people in history and kind of explaining what they did.
Got it.
What they did. And one is about Jane Goodall. So my niece became really into Jane Goodall. And then I watched this and I told my sister about it. And they actually ended up seeing her, going to a book signing that she did. And so that was right around the time this documentary came out. And it was so sweet because I feel like it also talked a lot about her learning about how to be a mother and the way that her mother supported her in going to study these
at a time where the idea is ludicrous when you contextualize a young girl going to do this. I mean,
it's crazy.
It's amazing.
She literally just follows these animals in the jungle around for months and they run away from her half the time.
Yeah.
Like it takes forever to even like break into their pack. But then she follows this mother chimp and sees the way that she mothers the baby, and she's like, I feel like I learned so much about like when she has her own kids. It was just so sweet.
Well, she basically, and I didn't realize that it was just so recent that research alone was basically what enabled us to see that our true connection to certain primates. It was
definitely,
that was a huge for years. I mean, it still exists, the institution.
It was so cool. And but that's just amazing. In general, the way that like chimps interact with each other, like there's definitely the alpha, and it was so cool to watch everything about it. I was like,
and how pained she was to see, you know, when the harmony, what she deemed, you know, peace, turned into chaos.
Yeah.
But even in the documentary that I worked on, again, with animals, you know, Mark, we talked a lot about harmony, that life itself is not about, you know, if you're feeling like everything is flowing really nicely and you want to like latch onto it, you're actually then tensing up. Mm-hmm. And harmony is, Mark always says, you can't have green grass without the rain. And so, you know, when Jane was watching those, and it's heartbreaking to see, because you see how everyone is capable of doing harm, mm-hmm. as well as, you know, bringing a lot of love and an abundance of affection. So
yeah,
that movie is, and how she changed her life for it and defied, you know, what we deem milestones and the expectations of women. You know, she chose a life path that's just,
I know. And then you see these students that go to study under her and you're like, how did you come upon this?
Yeah. What internship application did you get? And how, yeah.
Yeah. It's so, that was such a touching film, I thought. What, so you wrapped shooting this.
Yeah. We're in post now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is that difficult? Because I feel like you have an idea in your head of like what you took away from this. So mm-hmm. then trying to edit it together, like I feel like that would be when you're so close to something.
It's so close, right? And so far. It's finally starting to be really exciting. But again, because it's documentary, it's even, I can't wait to do a narrative, get back to narrative after this, because documentary we shot, I mean, days and days. We shot as much footage as, I don't know, 3 feature films.
Really?
Yeah. Because you just don't know where the story is exactly. And yeah, you can prepare as much as you want, but then you have to be present because it's happening in the now. So, you know, we're not manipulating anything.
Yeah.
So finding the story in the post world, yeah, you have to continuously let go of all your expectations, any preconceived notions about where you're at, because you have to look at it with objective, fresh eyes every time. But I have an amazing, you know, again, we're a really small budget, but the team is incredible, and everyone we've been able to bring on does it because they see the value and the beauty of the work that we're doing. So the editor, he's great, and composer's getting really excited, and it's gonna
be cool.
It's taking longer than we anticipated, but not that much longer. It's going really well.
Yeah. That's so exciting.
Yeah.
Where did you go to shoot that?
We went to Colorado.
Ugh.
So I brought a small team.
I know.
And we were in Estes Park.
What a terrible place.
It was, oh my gosh, it was divine. And what's funny is when you watch a documentary, everyone looks like they're fine, but it was boiling. I mean,
really?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, because it's middle of summer.
Yeah. Mm. But it's good. It doesn't look like it is, which is a good thing. Yeah.
So really quickly, I saw that you trained at UCB.
Yes, I took classes there. Mm-hmm.
So have you always been pretty into improv?
I started in the theater when I got out of college, right before I finished college. I got my first professional job, and I was doing that for a couple of years before I realized I want to be more on camera and film. And
gotcha.
So comedy was always, improv eventually became a part of my life, but it was actually more so something that I discovered because, like, I remember, so reviews would come out every time I did a show, and I did a lot of dramas because that's theater is a lot more drama. Straight theater is a lot more dramas than comedies sometimes. And the reviews would always say, like I remember one show I did was like a 3-hour show about the Holocaust, and I'm on stage the whole time, and they were like, Dylan Silver made me laugh and it made me uncomfortable.
And you're like, thanks.
But then they would say how because they laughed and they had that catharsis, they finally actually relaxed. And then everything was even more profound to them. So I was figuring out pretty swiftly that just by playing the reality of a given circumstance and the vulnerability of it, that I was finding comedy a lot. So when I started writing my own sketches or my own shows, again, I just always did it through that path. And UCB was just something that I knew I needed to do because I didn't know, again, coming from Israel, there was so much I didn't know about. Like if I had lived in New York during high school, I'm sure I would have learned that UCB was a thing, but I didn't know about it till after college. So I just did it as part of what I needed. I knew I needed to continue to educate myself on what are the other ways that people who are doing comedy are getting into, you know, are getting their chops. And
do you go to a lot of shows now that you live here?
I used to go to a lot. I think now it's been a little less, and I started doing stand-up last year, so I went to some stand-up shows. And
oh cool,
yeah,
that's scary.
So oh my gosh, it's so scary. I have yet to walk off stage and not have blacked out. Like I watched the playback, I watched the video. I'm like, oh, those were words. Okay. Okay. Full sentences. Yeah.
That's so fun. Where have you done like so open mic somewhere?
Open mics. The last one I did, I took a big pause over the summer. Well, now it's in winter. Because I was directing the doc and we shot our whole season in the fall, summer and fall of You Wish You Lived Here.
Oh, gotcha.
But I did, the last job I did was I got into a Riot Girl. It's a like a women's comedy festival.
Sweet.
And I've done gigs at open mics and a couple of clubs, but I should get back into it.
Dude, that's honestly, you couldn't pay me $1 million to do
that. I was just
going to
say, I feel like you'd be really good at it.
You think?
Yes.
I feel like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I feel like, was there like some obvious things in your mind that you were like, yep, I got a joke with this?
I've had a lot of, how do I say it? There's just a lot of things I really want to talk about and bring to the, when I love movies, I love comedy, I love theater, and I just, because I voraciously consume this stuff, I see what I believe isn't necessarily enough representation of certain stories, certain narratives, and and I'm always about the vulnerability and the being connected. So, you know, I wanted to touch on the subjects. There's still subject matters that I'm not talented enough yet as a stand-up comic to even touch on. Yeah. I want to talk about, you know, I don't want to get dark.
More serious material.
Yeah, I really want to touch on the things in my life that I feel like if I can share a little more of my story and having lived through certain experiences that, again, people will feel like they're seeing more accurate representations of certain topics. But right now it's like, it's like being a loser. I talk about that a lot. Like when I was in elementary school and middle school, I was a child of immigrant kids and I barely knew it. I had an older sister who had my back sometimes and would like tell me to bathe
and Long Island,
how to dress. Yeah. Okay. I think it's always about the thing with comedy that I studied stand up a little bit when I wanted to start getting into it, and my teacher, he said the great thing. It's about looking at something that we've all looked at, but in a new way. Like, what is your opinion about something? And it's not that you're trashing it, you know, or you're just like, has anyone noticed that this thing is a bit.
Yeah.
Straight, funny. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like being a comedian would be a lot of that in your life. Just like kind of looking at something and trying to think of it in a way that is not the normal way to think of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Or just thinking of it. Yes. It's like, I remember the first time a comic went on stage, she had long hair like me. She was like, does anybody ever make art with their hair in the shower? And I was like, I thought I was the only one. And then she made this joke and then she like rubs it around. She's like, it's a masterpiece. Yeah. And I was like,
I'm Medusa.
I'm so done that, you know? Yeah. Or like, I remember the last gig I did, I think I talked about like when you see someone you dated, you see they're getting married and you just want to go up to that girl and be like, are you sure? Like, you know, and it's like, that's a thing we've all felt, but
totally.
Like, can we talk about it a little bit or?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was your first stand-up experience like? Like how long was your set?
Oh, it was short. We were asked to do, I think like 7 minutes and I did 3.5 or 4. I was like, I'm just going to make them want more, you know?
Yeah.
Which is fine. I think that was, it's like, well, they can't tell me to go back up on the stage. So I'll just do 3.5 killer minute. Or like, I also just nicked your mic. Like I'll talk about having an immigrant family a lot. But my parents, they have accents, but not thick Israeli ones, but I'll give them really thick Israeli accents to like drive home.
Yeah. Funny it up.
Funny enough, but also like that's the reality of how most, I think.
That's cool. Good for you. I love when people put themselves out there like that.
And I feel like as long as you're not talking unkindly to the audience, like I feel like it's not even about landing every joke. You don't need to do that. I think we love comedy because we love stand up because just seeing someone be vulnerable to come up there and just, you know, talk talk about things in a way that is inclusive and, you know, and even, and I love certain comics that I love or comedians, like they, nobody's exempt, you know, nobody is perfect. But that doesn't mean that then we were like, oh, and then we walk out. I think that's the hardest thing. Like I, like some of my comedy touches on politics and it's always about if I'm making fun of somebody, a politician or something, I want to make sure that they would never be like, this is just so rude. You know, they would say, oh, they see that I'm a human being.
Yeah.
They see that I'm.
Yeah. It's like, maybe I don't agree, but okay. Touche. Fair point.
Yeah. And then maybe I'm like, oh, wow. Now they want to talk more about comedy. And
yeah.
Yeah. So it's always, I mean, yes, I, comedians, we take risks, but yeah.
Yeah. There's, it's so much more funny too, seeing someone in person. Don't you think if you watch like a special on TV versus like when you see someone in person just in front of all these people on stage and you're just in the audience like hiding in the dark sipping a drink, but like someone just up there, bright lights, like laugh at me, you know,
it's
like
crazy.
It's so vulnerable.
It's so vulnerable. And
it's just really putting yourself out there in the most intense way that I think it's cool when people try it.
The energy is, there's nothing like it. I mean, even when I was doing professional theater, and I'm sure one day I'll get to go back to it a little bit, and that relationship of, you know, they know what I've committed myself to and I know what they've committed themselves to. It's no joke. You know, we, you go to a stand-up show, people paid. They paid, they're there, they're getting their two drink minimum, they're putting down a lot of money. Not that the pressure's on, but like just be, just enjoy them and let them enjoy you. You know, if I think if your fears get in the way of you doing your job, that's when it's unfortunate, because that doesn't make anybody feel good. They could feel it. You could feel, you know, you fear is okay. You just can't let it ride the bus.
Yeah.
I'm sure when you do this, you know, there must be, I mean, that's really what you're doing is incredible. And you, and your approach to it is so natural that I'm sure that's because that's probably riddled with fear sometimes.
Definitely every time before someone comes in, I have like a little bit of I get like anxious.
Yeah.
Because I think, because you never know how they'll be. I mean, unless it's literally your friend or your someone you know, you don't know how they'll be. And sometimes like, yes, but I think that's good. Like you're saying, when you do something that you're not necessarily used to doing, you only feel better afterward. Like even if it wasn't necessarily like the best podcast episode or the best like 5 minutes of stand up, at least you did it.
Totally. And who said it need, what even is the best? And who said you needed to do that?
Yeah.
You know, it's this like this standard that we put ourselves upon. When I think like this doc, it's the first time I'll ever have made a documentary. And I, I want it to be the best doc, you know, whatever. But I just keep going back to the work. Like, I just want to tell the story. So how can I tell the story to the, to honor the story? Or, you know, stand up. I just want to make, I just want to give a energy that makes people feel a little loved, a little more loved, you know, or see that we're all silly people or sorry, I don't know. It's like, it's not about, I want to be the, it's not about that. It's more about the work. I don't know, when I detach myself from it. So it's not about me anymore. It's about, you know, the pod, you know, you're like, I just want the podcast to,
making something and putting it out there into the world, because other people are going to digest it and like take it however they view it.
Yeah.
Know, like, and making and something and
you,
putting
there's
it out
no
there.
Way you have any, you have no power over that.
Mm-hmm.
I think with art, it's really hard because we forget that it is not up to us how anybody receives it. You know, even like somebody could disagree with a lot of the things that I'm doing, but that's not, that's, and I think good art elicits strong opinions.
Yeah.
So if you're just watching something and you're like, no, I feel all right. You're just like, I'm not sure.
That was
That was cute. It didn't really start a dialogue of any kind. And, you know, even our show, You Wish You Lived Here, like, I think it goes beyond like, oh, I feel nice. Like, people are like, oh my gosh. Like, they get revved up, you know?
And, definitely.
And so even in the DIY design world, like, that's possible. So and with,
but it still inspires creativity in someone watching, I think.
Yes. Like, and I think that's that. If you can do that,
yeah.
I bet people listen to your podcast and they're like, I want to start a podcast.
Probably. Don't you feel like podcasts are the new blogs? Like, for a while there was like everyone had a blog and now everyone has a podcast.
I know. I'm way too late because now I've started writing op-ed pieces.
Oh,
they're like, nobody wants, because they're like, that's not what people are doing now.
Yeah. Speaking of comedians, like, I think that's how so many people know about comedy now, is because all comedians have podcasts and like they all talk about it.
It's great.
You know what I mean?
It's how they monetize their lives now.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Okay, so one more thing before we get out of here. Yes. I saw that you draw inspiration from multiple things on your website.
Okay.
One of them is Stevie Wonder, who is the best.
Yes.
Love Stevie. Secondly, another thing you said was SpongeBob seasons 1 through 3.
Yeah, huge.
What happened after season 3?
I don't know. I think
Or were you just really into the first 3?
Well, I moved to Israel and I had the DVDs of season. But I think also the writing changed. I think either one of the creators had either departed or something. But also in its essence, they were just genius. Like one episode was just SpongeBob trying to get Gary in a bathtub. And that's the whole episode. And it's so good. Yeah.
SpongeBob was, we were talking about Nick at Night. I feel like SpongeBob was big. When did SpongeBob first come out? What year? Do you know?
I think we were, no, I have no idea.
Like maybe elementary school?
I think elementary school, yeah.
It was fairly young, yeah. But I looked up, because there's a ton of seasons. They made like
30? I don't know. I'm just making up a number, actually.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
It was a lot. It was more than 10.
Okay. Well, actually, 30 would make sense because I'm thinking about 8. Yeah, you know. Maybe it's more than 10, yes.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's not as much as King of the Hill, because I know King of the Hill is the long... No, Simpsons is the longest.
Simpsons, yeah.
And then King of the Hill is after, because I'm a huge King of the Hill fan, too.
You know, I've never seen one episode of King of the Hill.
I can't tell you if you would like it or not. You would either love it, or
I love South Park and Family Guy.
Do you like Mike Judd? Do you like Office Space, the movie?
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely.
It's Mike Judd. It's his...
Oh,
it's
really?
Beavis and Butthead. Do you like Beavis and Butthead?
Yes.
Do you like Daria?
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
I feel like Daria was one of those shows that I would casually watch, was never into, but I definitely watched Beavis and Butthead.
Okay.
Definitely loved. Is King of the Hill, what network does that air on?
I watch it on Hulu.
Oh, okay.
And all of Daria I've binged again on Hulu. I don't know if it's still there, but it was last time
Daria
I watched
it. Daria was kind of angsty, right?
Daria was MTV.
She's got black glasses.
Yeah, I was obsessed with her. I loved that cartoon. And if you listen to it, if you watch it, they were talking about things that, I mean, it's awesome. They would talk about race. They would talk about, you know, the anxieties of being a teenager. And they were all sort of, you know, very privileged kids, but they really did touch on, you know, dating in a more authentic way than we normally see. And that's why I love animation.
Daria, it's on Hulu?
Last time I binged it. This year. I know I was still couchless at the time, so it was at least a couple months ago. Yeah.
Good times. Yeah. Sitting on the floor.
Sitting on the floor. Yeah. I didn't even have it. I've never, since high school, I never had a TV, and I just got one for the first time since high school. But it's just for streaming. Yeah.
Right now. Honestly, like, you don't even need a TV. I mean, you it's nice to have, but I watch shows on my phone.
On your
at
phone.
Night, which is like, I have a TV.
Through what?
I watch
an app?
Phone. Yeah, on Netflix or Amazon Video.
Even for Rachel Ray, like I had to ask my friends who have a house to DVR it for me. Like I haven't seen
because you probably need like the bunny ears or cable.
You need cable.
One or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like now I'm even thinking my mom's coming to visit me, coming to America to visit me, and I'm thinking maybe I'll even wait till she arrives and then we can go to my friend's house and watch it together. Because she couldn't come to the taping.
Wait, that reminds me. Do your parents have Snapchat?
Now
like,
they do.
Did you make them download it so that they can watch?
Well, I didn't. Yes. But then they did that thing that parents will do. Like, you need to show me. And also, while you're doing that, can you also show me how to, you know, fix these other 50 problems that I'm having with my phone?
Yeah.
And then you're like, no, forget it. Don't download Snapchat.
I need to fix my iCloud. I can't get into my iCloud.
I can't even fix my own iCloud. It tells me that the storage is full and I just ignore it. And I'm not the person to have come to. But
they're probably so proud of you. That's cool.
They are.
It's just cool that you have these projects going on. And I feel like you just seem like a very thoughtful, creative person.
That's very kind. Same to you.
And you have a cool name. Dylan Silver is honestly the coolest name.
Thanks.
Don't you think? It is. Is Silver your real last name?
Silver is my mom's last name and what she goes by.
Yeah.
So I did that and...
It's just a cool name.
Oh, thanks.
It's like a memorable name, I think.
Dylan Silver.
Yeah, because Dylan, too, because Dylan's like any girls with typically like a Ryan, a Charlie, a Kyle,
love
a Dylan.
It. A Tyler.
Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, all right, well, thanks for chatting.
Oh my gosh, I had such a good time. Thank you for, I listened to the other people you had in your show and I was like, is she sure she wants
I'm so embarrassed.
But the variety of the people you talk to, it's awesome.
It's fun because it forces you to learn about things.
The woman who illustrates.
Mona.
She blew my mind.
The sketch artist. Oh my gosh. Sketch artist.
So good.
Like, what an insane thing.
And she's so humble too.
Yeah.
It's like, in my eyes, you're top dog.
Yeah.
At this.
And she hears some like heavy stuff in
I don't
in
know
a job
how she
like
separates
that.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a profession that I have infinite respect for, but I don't understand how I could ever.
No.
Ever. And she even talked about it on your podcast, like what she has to do. Oh, the things that are, when you asked her what's stuck in your mind, and she brought up one thing from years ago.
I know.
And it was like,
yeah,
just, I can't imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. That's tough. Yeah, I like there's been a couple where I literally someone has come in and I'm like, I honestly have no idea what you do, but it forces you to like meaning.
Yeah,
I've had to look up a lot of things about them to even know enough to like
ask some questions.
What questions to ask them?
But I also like how you're really honest because you're us, right? So when you ask someone, when you say really candidly, I don't really understand it. Can you talk about it from the beginning? Those are things that I, as a listener, want to know. So I also appreciate that you don't sort of play the part of, I know how you get these jobs to go to court.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, we want to know
those
things.
See, this is helpful feedback, actually.
Oh, this is public helpful feedback.
No, it's good. Yeah. Cause seriously, you do something and you put it out in the world and you're like, okay, well.
But when you go to your reunion, you'll let us know what else other people are saying about your show.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Miss Dylan Silver. Thank you for listening to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show. We have new episodes each week that you can get automatically downloaded onto your phone. Once again, I'm Kelly Taylor, and thank you very much for listening.